I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most, and they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits.
Welcome to ABG, Asian Boss Girl, a podcast for the modern day Asian American woman. I'm Janet.
I'm Mel.
I'm Anna.
It's been a while since we had an episode on female sexuality. We know this topic can be a bit taboo in our culture and maybe among some of your friendship circles as well, but it's important to talk about or at least be knowledgeable about. Especially as Asian women, our relationship with our sexuality can be incredibly complicated and nuanced, involving not only the physical, but the emotional and mental. At times, it may feel disheartening that we cannot control society's dialogue about Asian women and sexuality, but we can start by controlling our own personal narratives with our sexuality.
Anna Lee is the co-founder of Lioness, the women-led sexual health startup that built the world's first and only smart vibrator that gives biofeedback data to help people learn more about their own bodies and improve their understanding of sexual pleasure. She was named 2020's Forbes 30 Under 30, as well as Paper Magazine's Asian Women Creators You Need to Know. Prior to Lioness, Anna was a mechanical engineer at Amazon, launching the Amazon Dash Button's original concept and the Kindle Voyage page press technology. She is a big advocate in Lioness's mission to expand understanding and research in sexual health and destigmatize female sexuality. Welcome to the ABG podcast, Anna Lee.
Yay. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. When we heard about your product and about you and the work that you do and the topic of sexuality particularly, we were so excited to get you on.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm super excited to be here. It's always fun to talk sex stuff, I think.
Yeah. Before we get into the juicy stuff, we'd love to learn a little bit more about your background, Anna. So you are Korean American.
Yes.
And you grew up in a Korean immigrant, very conservative, very religious family.
Yes.
Can you share with our listeners what that was like? How would you describe your parents and how would you describe Anna when she was younger?
Oh, that's a good question. So I was born in California, but I moved to Korea when I was a baby. So I lived there till I was six and then we moved back to the U.S. And like my parents are very, I think, your traditional Korean parents that are like really about trying to give us better opportunities and moving to America and all of that, like sacrificing themselves so that they can give me and my brother better opportunities here. And so I grew up really strict in a very strict conservative family. They had really good ideals on what we were supposed to be when we grew up. And so I think I always had in my mindset of, you know, like I was going to be in STEM in some way or a doctor or a lawyer. And then I was going to do that for the rest of my life. And then, you know, kind of pay back, I think, the debt that a lot of us carry for our parents of like, this is how we're going to repay them and like how they grew up for us and sacrifice and all of that. So I think younger me, I think definitely had a lot of those, like, I want to say almost like stereotype Asian feelings of like wanting to work really hard, be in every club I could possibly be in. But if, like, I think the main thing is like, we never talked about sex. Like, I think maybe once in my life she was like, hey, if you like ever something happens, and I think she was probably talking about like unplanned pregnancy, and she was like, you need to tell me no matter what happens. And so, but she didn't even like exactly describe what she was talking about. She just was like, if something happens to your body, you need to like tell me right away. So I think we definitely grew up in a very like hush hush environment, and like definitely didn't know going into like all of this. I just had really strict ideals that I was gonna be like a really good engineer and I was gonna work in a corporate America for the rest of my life. So I think definitely that was like how my whole childhood kind of came up to, like, as in, like, my adult ideals.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I actually resonate so much with when you were describing, like, join every club possible and work really hard, and then the awkward conversation with your mom. I actually, which, yeah, like, if they don't use their direct words. It's more like a little bit of in the eye, the way they look at you, and then to your body, you know what I'm talking about. You
exactly.
That's always awkward, though. I think my mom, we like, I think I shared this on an old episode, but like I had a, like a, I was a very paranoid teenager, and so I thought I had a pregnancy scare, so I had to tell her about it. But before that, we didn't really talk about sex.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like the word sex, you just don't say that word in an Asian household. And you're also, when you're watching sex scenes, or like, you know, you watch a movie and that scene comes up, you're like, oh my God, my parents are here. This is so awkward.
You're like gripping on your couch, like, oh my God.
Like, everyone, I think, has that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
But Anna, you shared in other interviews that, you know, your work in female sexual health is, you know, rooted in a very personal experience. Do you mind sharing with the listeners that what that experience was and how that relates to your culture?
Yeah, of course. So when I was growing up as a kid, I experienced sexual trauma, I think, like I think it was for like a good like 4 years or something. And I think that really, like, I think about this a lot now, because now that I think I'm a little bit older and I like feel more like in a safe space, and also like years of therapy, definitely highly recommend for anyone, is like I realized like that experience made me feel like I never owned my own body. It was like I never felt like I could experience self-pleasure or like masturbation, because I was like, I don't deserve to like enjoy pleasure, because it means that like it goes back to this trauma. It's like everything tied back into being like, I'm not allowed to like enjoy pleasure. And so I think even when it came to starting to like have sex with partners, a lot of times I was so scared to like talk about what I liked or didn't like or didn't want to do, or like just all of these different parts of, I think, sex. And I think it happens a lot for like a lot of, I think especially women, we hear this a lot, especially in like a hetero relationship, is that like a lot of times you learn like sex in the lens of the guy, like what the guy wants to do, what the like what's pleasurable, what sex should feel like. So I think definitely for me, like I felt so uncomfortable with my own body. And I tell this story all the time because I think it's so important that like I didn't grow up being like, I'm so open about sex, I want to talk about sex with everybody. Like when we first started this company, I was like, I was like, I'm just going to be the really good engineer behind the product. I was like, I am never going to do the interviews. Like, I was scared to say the word clitoris or orgasms. Like, that was so scary to me. And so, like, I always say, like, this has been my own, like, 6-7 year journey of, like, understanding my own body and, like, just learning to feel comfortable and, like, confident in the idea of, like, this is just how my body works. This is stuff I like and don't like. So I think definitely for me, the trauma, I think, in a weird way, it was like for me, like a way to confront it, like really face forward of just being like, well, I'm going to take ownership of like how I want to talk about it, how I want to feel comfortable with it. So it's been really cool to see like my own journey through it and like all of that. So yeah, I think it definitely tied into ending up like, because I never also wanted to be an entrepreneur, like it was never in my like thing to be like, oh yeah, I want to start my own company. So it was kind of the perfect storm of all the perfect things that I really felt passionate about that ended me up here.
Yeah. Oh, I love that story of what you do now connects to like past experiences that you had that at one point were maybe challenging to confront.
Yeah.
And you stated that kind of, you feel like in the last 6 to 7 years, you've really changed your relationship with that occurrence kind of through your work with Lioness.
Yeah.
But how did you first go about confronting and healing that experience?
You know, honestly, like I can't emphasize this enough of like, if people have the access and like ability to, like, therapy is such an important part of like, because I think for me it was one of those things, like I went into like a really deep depression in college because I was, for me, like I moved to going to college thinking that like I could run away from the problem, right? And then I think you get into this realization, like for me, like I was in college one day and being like, oh my God, this stuff sticks with you for the rest of, like, it just, it's not physical distance of like somewhere, but it's like that, it's like, you know, it's like hurt you internally. So I think a lot of it for me was like, I went into deep depression, but again, like I think especially in Asian culture, like I didn't even know the term depression or how common it was. And so I was like, what is wrong with me? Why do I feel like this? And I remember like, it was really only when I was about to like drop out of college, one of my professors was like, you didn't show up to your final. Like, are you okay? Like, are you good? And so I like had a whole like thing, and he was like, hey, have you ever thought you might have like depression? He's like, you should talk to a therapist. So he really was like the person that made me even realize it was a thing. And I have to laugh about it now because I'm super open about like, you know, like going through depression and like going to therapy. And then my whole family at some point has been like, oh yeah, I've experienced depression. And I was like, why didn't anybody say anything? Yeah, like as someone, yeah, like if we all talked about it, we would all been like, oh, maybe it runs in the family, like yeah, something. And I was like, that is so crazy. So I think it's definitely one of those like, one, I think just talking about it and then yeah, going to therapy is like super like, I think life-saving in a lot of ways. Mm. And then yeah, I think just overall, like the things you do to like be good to yourself and self-care and all of that. So accumulation of everything.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's, I mean, we definitely talk about therapy a lot mm-hmm. on this podcast. Yay. And it's wonderful to hear your story that was like a personal experience that relates to the greater, you know, of your professional success yes. too. So.
Yeah, I could, and I totally understand what you're saying that like, I'm happy you were able to work through your depression and actively still, you know, take care of yourself. Yeah, when I talked to my mom about it, like, I think talking to your family, and once you unlock that door, you're like, oh, this is actually kind of common, like, but no yeah. one wants to talk about it because it's so hush-hush. Yeah. It's like, mental health is like sex. You don't talk about it yeah. because it's a shameful thing, yes. right? But I love that you shared when you got into your current role as an entrepreneur doing Lioness, is like, you had to confront your, like, relationship with your body and sexuality. And you also shared earlier that, you know, you come from a very conservative family, and you kind of, and you started off as, you know, a mechanical engineer and product designer. Can you walk us through, like, how did you decide on that major and how did you even end up working in sexual health?
Yeah. So I always liked tinkering and, like, building things. And not that I, like, this is my villain story, but it's in high school. I did an internship at an aerospace company. And it was, quote, unquote, like a mechanical engineering internship. But as a high schooler, what do you, I don't know if you're, like, really, I don't know, building anything. Yeah. And so when I was at that internship, I remember like I was one of the only women like interns like in the technical space, and I remember like the guy interns in high, they were in high school too, like they were building like this like rocket thing, and I was like, that is so cool. And for some reason I was doing like paperwork oh. and like scanning things and like filing things and making a filing whatever inventory thing, and I couldn't help but feel like there's something wrong, like there's something that feels wrong. And then I think there was like a point where like one of the upper managers were like calling me like sweetie, and I was like, ooh. I don't know what it is, but it feels wrong. And so in terms of like a villain story, I really like almost in spite was like, I'm gonna become the best engineer, like I'm gonna be the smartest, like I'm gonna take over this company. Like I just had all these like, I don't know, teenage angst of being like, I'm gonna prove them wrong. So I think from that, I was like, I'm going to become an engineer. And I already liked, like, engineering stuff. So I got into college. That faded away because I think that driving yourself through anger, like, that way is never helpful, like, as a growing experience. But so I was a materials science engineering, and then I realized I hated it. And then I took a machine shop class, and I was like, I really want to learn how to skateboard. So I was like, I want to build a skateboard. And I was like, that's going to be the best way to learn how to skateboard. And so I like built a skateboard in machine shop class. And I just remember having this feeling of like, this is so cool to be able to think of something and then design it and then build it and then like have something physical. And so I think from there, I knew that I wanted to do more consumer hardware stuff. So then I was at Amazon, and then I really felt like I was like, I achieved exactly what I was supposed to do. Like I was in this like big company doing engineering, like all these really cool things. And like my team was amazing. But again, it was a feeling of I was like the only woman engineer on my team of like 16 engineering people. Mm. And I remember again, just feeling like they're awesome, but you just can never shake off the feeling like you're never an engineer. You're like a woman engineer first. Like it always felt like there was a little bit something. And then just luckily, I think there was like after a couple years there, I met a founder of a different sex toy company that doesn't exist anymore. So I love telling this story because I think I'm not slandering anyone, yeah. But it was a guy, and I was like, how do you know what you're building works for people with vaginas? And he was like, there is an industry standard where you put the vibration on your nose, and that's what a clitoris feels like. And I remember just being like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like, I was like, what? And then, like, sure enough, if you go to sex toy conventions now, like, it's a really common thing for people to be like, oh, put the vibration on your nose or the skin between your thumb and pointer finger. And they're like, that skin's so sensitive. It's just like your clitoris. Like, it's a really common thing. And I was like, I can't believe he, like, something so intimate for a lot of people and really personal is built in this way. And so I was just remember being like, oh man, I feel like I could design. I was like, I feel like I could engineer such better vibrators. Like, it's things I already do. Like, I know how to do manufacturing. I know how to do mechanical design. And so I ended up meeting my two co-founders who were working on a smart vibrator at the time, who are my two co-founders that I met through my roommate. And then I was like, hey, I just want to help. I was like, I'm not asking for, like, partnership, equity, like, foundership. Like, I was like, I just want to, I was like, this sounds like a really cool side project. And then what I thought was a side project, I mean, clearly I, like, quit my job, and now I've become a full-time founder for the past 6 years. So, yeah, life's kind of funny that way.
I mean, okay, I love that the thing you thought was like, I could do this better. You could see there's a glimpse of that in a lot of your past too, in your internship. Like, what did you call me? I'm gonna show you.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I will say I'm very, like, driven by, like, I feel like I could do this kind of thing. And I don't know if that's, like, I don't know if it's good advice for people to follow, like, when you're, like, mad about something, but definitely passion's carried, I would say.
Yeah, the passion and the craftsmanship. Oh my god, I love that story.
Yeah.
Dang. We definitely see how then you met your two co-founders and then you started, you know, working on this product. How did you tell your parents what you do? Or do they understand what you do, or how did you explain it?
Or is it a lie?
Let's see. So I didn't tell them for the first year when I quit my job. Mm. I just told them that I was like, hey, I'm thinking about working on this project. Like, I'm not sure where it's going to go, but I'm fine. Is the first thing I was like, I'm fine. I'm like, I saved money from that job. Like, I'm okay. And then that's all I left it at. And I think because she lives in LA and I live in San Francisco, and she was like, hey, I'm not hearing from you very often. Is everything okay? And then I remember just being like, she was like, I'm going to come visit. And then
your mom, right?
Yeah. Oh. And then I was like, oh, like, okay. And then I was in my head, I was like, this is probably the time that I have to kind of tell her, like, what I'm doing. And so she came to visit, and we were like, just start, like, we were like a year in, like, we had a shared space with like three people and a tiny desk in a shared, like, office of like 50 other companies. We had like all these vibrators on the table, like, it looked wild. And so she came and I was like, okay, so let me just explain what I do. Like, we're making a smart vibrator. I don't know if she knows to this day what a smart vibrator technically is. And I will say, I've actually taken Korean classes before, and I've, like, worked directly on, like, how do I talk about this in Korean? Because I don't know, like, the words for, like, clitoris or orgasm or biofeedback. Like, those are all, like, way beyond my skill sets. And then she was really quiet, and she knew about the trauma that happened when I was younger, too. But, like, that was, again, one of those things we completely swept under the rug. Like, as it happened, we were just very, like, okay, let's just move on with our lives. And so it was the first time she was really quiet, and then she was like, you know, when I was younger, like, I used to own a vibrator.
What? And then wow. Like,
and I remember looking at her and being like, oh. And she was like, yeah. And she was like, she started describing it. And I, like, in my head, I knew exactly what she was talking about.
Oh, you're like, mom, I know this exact product, like, the brand and the number because of my research.
And I was, like, really quiet. And then we just started talking, like, the next 2 hours. Like, we were, like, walking around. I so remember this vividly. Like, we were walking around UC Berkeley's campus, just talking about, like, sex. She was giving me sex advice. I was giving her sex advice.
With your mom?
Yes. And we were, like, talking, and she was asking me, like, when did you lose your virginity? Who was it to? Where was it at? Like, we just talked everything. Like, I've never done it again, but it was the most, like, beautiful, disgusting things I've ever done. Like, so beautiful in that, like, I could not believe I just had that conversation with my mom, and I was, like, so grateful that's how she responded. But also, it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's still your mom. And the fact that, like, I gave her sex advice, sometimes I'm like, did she use it? God, I know. I'm like, sometimes I'm like, oh my God, like, I know too much. And so, so she, like, you know, was like, you know, as long as you're doing something that makes you happy. And I think the most important thing she told me was, like, it, again, it was said so, like, generalized. But I think what she was talking about, she was like, I always wondered if you're okay after all of that happened. And she was like, it's nice to know that it sounds like you're okay. And I was like, yeah. I was like, honestly, like, I just feel like I'm in a really good place. I feel really happy. And so she felt really, I think, relieved that we were weirdly able to have that conversation, just being like, hey, you're okay. Like, I'm okay, kind of thing. So she knows what I do for a living now. I mean, she's still, you know, She's still my Korean mom, so she's like, when are you going to get a real job? Mm. Like, and she's like, don't ever do interviews. Like, don't ever be a public facing. So she doesn't really know about my, like, TikTok.
The extent
or,
of what you're
doing. Yeah, like, that I'm sharing my orgasm data with the world or anything like that. Like, when we first finished our production of our first Lioness season, it took us 3 years to develop. I was in China, and I grabbed the first box that came off the line, and I flew straight to LA, and I, like, gave it to her, and I was like, I don't care if you use it, but I just want you to know, like, this is what I've been working on for 3 years. Like, it's very important to me. And so she still has it. I don't know if she's used it. I don't know if it's out of the packaging or anything like that, but it was, like, very special to me to be, like, being able to give her a vibrator, because, like, who does that?
Yeah. Wow, that is such an amazing conversation to be able to have with your mom. And
yeah.
On so many levels, not only because there's, like, this levels of taboo, levels of, like, your personal experiences, the healing of her as, like, as your mother knowing that you're okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But with that said, like, I remember after she left, I, like, called my brother and I are really close. I, like, called him immediately, and I was like, because he's known what I've done for, like, you know, since the get-go. And I was like, oh my God, I need to tell you. And he was like, if you tell me anything about mom's life, like, he was like, don't tell me. He's like, carry that to the grave. And I was like, damn. So, like, I just know so much in my own
head. Oh no. Cannot delete. Yeah.
Like, I can't pass it anywhere. So I was like, oh my God.
Is it so, you know, it's so weird. I have this thought. Sometimes I'm just like, this is maybe weird, but, like, it's very normal. Like, we know our parents, like, have sex because we're here.
Yeah.
Obviously. Or, like, we know people, you know, they usually do it. So I don't know why, but as their child, I'm just like, I don't want to think about it or know. Or, like, I just don't want to believe that they do that.
Yes. You know? I don't know. I think the older people are, like, highly sexual people. We just don't give them the credit for it. But again, yes, I think it's the idea of, like, your parents doing it and then you're like, oh my God.
I know. I'm so shocked that you guys had, like, the detailed conversation, because, like, I'm actually really close to my mom, but that's, like, no, we're not
talking.
Hell the F no. Sorry, mom, no.
Oh, she's like, now, like, maybe, yeah.
Oh God,
she's gonna be next on this podcast being like, you do the whole thing.
Skillshare is a sponsor of today's episode. I've been in the social media space for about 10 years now, and one thing I learned is that I have to keep sharpening my skills. In this landscape, the rules and content is constantly changing, so I need to be on my toes at all times. A leader in this space that I like to reference from time to time is Gary Vaynerchuk. One class I'm excited to take is his Context is Key, Social Media Strategy in a Noisy Online World. In the world of social, he explains how we need to do a better job understanding our context so we can storytell in an effective way. He then breaks down each platform and their functions, because one thing I definitely learned is that each platform has its own tools and has to be used differently. One big draw to his class is the use of case studies. This is so important to show real-life samples of how we can utilize social media in a smart way. I'm excited to continue to hone in and grow my social media skills with Skillshare. Besides social media, they have classes on a variety of topics such as film and video, creative writing, graphic design, freelance and entrepreneurship, just to name a few. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/ABG, where our listeners can get 1 month free trial of premium membership. Again, that's 1 month free of premium membership at skillshare.com/ABG.
The holidays are just around the corner, and if you're anything like me, I hate scrambling last minute to buy gifts. That's why Luna's Weighted Blanket is the perfect solution. It's a one-stop shop for everyone on your list. Your mother-in-law who can't fall asleep, your best friend who feels anxious at night, and even your nephew who refuses to go down at nap time. Luna blankets are Okotex 100 certified, meaning naturally dyed and free of harmful chemicals. The weighted duvet style is versatile and can be used alone or layered on the bed. Its pressure quiets your thoughts to provide the deep sleep your body craves. New York Magazine called it the best weighted blanket to gift. So hurry over to lunablanket.com and take 10% off with coupon code ABG. That's lunablanket.com. Take 10% off with coupon code ABG.
I don't know about you, but it feels like a lot of my friends are now getting on that baby train. If you have a friend who is also expecting or have little ones still in diapers, I always recommend Pampers Swaddlers. With Pampers Swaddlers, you can also rest assured that this diaper will prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Swaddlers has dual leak guard barriers at the legs to help protect where leaks happen most, and they have a blowout barrier, which is an innovative back pocket built into the diaper to help prevent those messy leaks up the back. Did you know that on average, babies will use up to 8,000 plus diapers before becoming potty trained? That is a lot. That's why Pampers Diaper Stash is the hottest baby gift for 2024. So give a gift to a loved one that says, "We see you and we've got you." Pampers Diaper Stash is an online diaper fund that all parents with little ones will love. You can organize friends and family to contribute to a group gift of an online stockpile that never has to run out. Pampers Diaper Stash is great because it takes the guesswork out of choosing what size and how many diapers to gift. It's so easy to do, and it's the gift that always fits.
Well, thank you for sharing that story, Anna, and sharing with us the background of you and your company. Now we've got some juicier questions.
Yes.
We'd love to ask you.
So excited.
So we actually have your product with us here, Lioness, and I see the packaging and I see, like, you know, the big aspect of this is that you guys are collecting biofeedback data, and that's what makes it unique. So kind of like how there's, you know, a lot of people wearing their Fitbits and their Apple Watches, and everyone wants to track their sleep and their exercise. Like, why not track your orgasms and your sexual activity and to be better knowledgeable about that? With this, your company has been around for a couple of years now, and you all have gathered the largest data set of female physiology during arousal and orgasm. We're wondering if you can share with us what the top three most, like, surprising things you've learned are.
I have three now. Okay, so I think the first one is, so for us, like, because there's such lack of research in female sexual function, it's a super limited research. So I think the question is always, like, am I normal? Like, all of these things, right? And there's so much, there's so many things that changes your pleasure and orgasm that sometimes you don't even think about, and it's connected to your overall well-being. So I think some of the coolest things we've learned is the first one is that currently we kind of categorize orgasms. There's a unique pattern with your pelvic floor movement that happens. So how your vaginal muscles or your anal muscles squeeze and relax involuntarily is like your best indicator for an orgasm. And there's a really unique pattern that happens when you have an orgasm. So if you see it on the graph on your app, like, you'll see, like, you know, all these spikes, and then during the orgasm, there's a unique pattern that happens that looks really different from the rest of your data. So one of the cool things we've learned is, like, we segmented into three different types so far, and we're hoping, like, there's a lot more. It's just we don't know currently, and it's based on a research study back in the 80s, and now we're, like, proving it with our Lioness data, is that we call it the ocean wave type, the avalanche type, and the volcano type. So the way you have an orgasm, so the ocean wave is a rhythmic pelvic floor movement, so your vaginal walls are squeezing, relaxing, and the pressure is kind of, the force is really similar, so it's kind of like an up-down movement. That's usually the most common one we've seen. I'm also an ocean wave. My other co-founder is an ocean wave. It's really funny. Our team, we share data all the time with each other that I feel like I could look at someone and be like, I know who that is.
Oh, wow.
And then there's the avalanche, which is, it's similar to the ocean wave where you're seeing a squeeze, relax, but it starts at a higher force and then it goes down in force over time. So like a little avalanche slope. And then volcano types are like your classic movie-esque, like how they describe it in movies, is like a huge explosion of force and then like a really steep drop down in force. So there's not as much of like a rhythmic pelvic floor movement that's going. And this was really important for us because I think the question of like, am I normal? Or like, am I having an orgasm? Because the way my friend described it is very different than what I'm feeling. And I've had that experience in college where I remember being like, I think I'm not doing it right. And I think about it now, and I'm pretty sure that person that described it was a volcano type, and because I'm an ocean wave, I was like, dang, mine's like not like a short burst, it's like a longer kind of feeling of like a really like flowy feeling. And now I'm like, I think we were just totally different types. Yeah. And so we always like pushing that one because we're like, everybody's different, like you just need to figure out like what's yours. And then the second one that I love telling people is we have an athlete that's a longtime Lioness user. And so she's a volcano type. And she came back to us one day and she was like, I think my Lioness is broken. She's like, my data looks really weird. And so we started like diagnosing like all of the hardware, or, like everything. And we're like, we can't find anything. But what happened on this date? Because that's when your data started to flatline. And she was like, oh, she's like, I had a sports injury. She's like, I had a concussion. And then we were all like, I think the concussion might have done something. And so that was a really cool moment. It's one of those things, it's like, you would have never known. Like, if you have a concussion, you're not even thinking about a lot of times, like, oh, like how your sexual pleasure has changed or any of that. And it could be like added stress to your life, like whatever. And for us to kind of see that proof of like her having the concussion, her data flatlining, and then as she got physical therapy and she's like, I'm gonna take a pause from my sport. And she started doing physical therapy, and over the months you saw her data come back. So we were like, there's something so interesting here. And so my co-founder actually got to present it at a medical conference of just being like, hey, like these are the things we don't ever get to study. And then we leave people with vaginas and women with more questions because they're like, something's wrong with me. And then no one has data or information about why that might be happening. And then the third one, I think a lot of people, and including myself, is like, is this normal? Like, what's the average time for people to be masturbating? Or like, how often? Or how old? Or, you know, like, that's a really common question because people just want to know what range of the world they're in.
Yeah.
And I think the most interesting thing we've ever seen with our data, or like, you know, people opting in to let us see their data, is like, it's such a wide skew. Like, it's really hard to ever be like, 1 hour or like 2 minutes. Like, everyone is so different. And so I always like, you know, because people are always like, every body is unique. And then you're just like, okay, thank you for that. Like,
doesn't help me.
That, like, powerful talk. And so, but for us, it's literally like, hey, here's the data skew. Like, it seriously does look so widespread of like different ages, different times, different lengths of orgasms, whether you have one or you don't have one. Like, it's so wide. And so it's really cool to kind of tell people, like, truly bodies are really, really different. And you just kind of have to just know what works for you and like what doesn't work, and you can't really compare that to other people.
Well, I love already that you are able to create three patterns of orgasm. So as women, it's like a curiosity to understand, am I what were the three again?
The ocean wave, avalanche, and volcano.
Let's be real, me and you are both like, which one are we?
That's what I'm thinking too. I was like,
Yo, every time I tell this, you see everyone's eyes kind of go up because I can tell people are like, I wonder what mine is. And they like, it's really fun to see people kind of start like thinking about their orgasms in that way.
Oh, I have so many questions. I love that you share those three different types because I'm definitely someone that like, I talk to my friends about, I'm pretty open about sex with my friends, and like, I have friends who are like definitely more like sexually active than I am, and they orgasm so much like, it's just so easy for them. And so I'm over here like on all the Cosmo articles and Google and be like, and just pulling my research data from my friends. It's harder for women to orgasm during sex, you know, based on your research. I don't know if you could find it with yours, but do you know why? And a second follow-up is, I feel like it's easier for women to be solo and masturbate and have an orgasm versus with a partner. So I'm like wondering why.
That's a great question. So I think the biggest emphasis is that there's this thing called the orgasm gap. It's clear, and it's been multiple studies around this. I would say like maybe the most common one that's cited is that heterosexual men, when they have sex, they 95% of the men report that they orgasm, versus heterosexual women, it's 65% of women say they orgasm during sex. So the orgasm gap is like, what is that? Is it a physiological thing? Are women just have a harder time orgasming? Like, I think the big question becomes like, why? But then when you start looking at like the little nuanced studies of like people that own sex toys, like have a easier time orgasming, or people in like lesbian relationships or bisexual relationships also have a higher rate of orgasm. So then it becomes a question of like, okay, like what is it? And I think, I'm sure we could talk about this for hours, but I think it really boils down one to the patriarchy and like just the cultural and societal historical stigma around women's sexual pleasure, like sexual pleasure for people with vaginas. It's always been really encompassed around like men's pleasure, like how do we please men? And like, it's really ingrained so deeply in our society that like I, as a proof point of like, even to this day, the fact that like erectile dysfunction ads can be public on Instagram, on, you know, the New York subway, like all of that. But when it's a women's sex toy or a sex toy for people with vaginas, that's not allowed. And so it becomes a question of like, why is that still such a stigma in our society? So I think that's one, is like, definitely there's a continuing stigma of like, we're not really taught to focus on our own pleasure. And I think even I would say commonly what the question, the comment that I get all the time is like, oh, but I'm in a relationship, so I don't need a sex toy. And I'm always like, yeah, but they're not competitors, they're collaborators. And so I'm like, I think there's still this like common thing of like, I don't need to be masturbating if I have a person. And so that's one, the insane lack of research in this field. Like I used to go to my OBGYN and be like, hey, this is happening when I have sex. Like, is this normal? And then they're like, oh, you know, like anything could happen. And like, if you have an IUD, like your hormones could, you know, like you don't really get answers. And it's also just, there's not enough resources of learning about your body, being able to ask questions, there's research around it. Like, it's so limited. Like, we have terrible sex education for the most part. So let me think. So the society, like the patriarchy, the research, and then also just like female anatomy is a really, like, I think only in the recent years I've really heard this thing of like people really being like focused on the clitoris. It's the only body part in our entire system that its main function is for pleasure. Its only function is for pleasure, and like, it's really special, but no one really talks about it, of like what the full structure looks like, because part, like most of it's actually internal. Like the clitoris that you're seeing is the clitoris glands. It's like the tip of the iceberg. Like, that's stuff that we don't ever learn. And I'm only seeing because social media, like these amazing sex educators are coming out like really harping on it. So I think there's just so much lack of information. So I don't think that it's like harder for women to have orgasms. I think it's just that we've been built in a society a lot of times that didn't set us up for success a lot of times.
Actually, what you said made me think about kind of comparing it to like exercise or anything, right? Like, if guys are just, it's more widely acceptable that they should be doing it, the more you do something, the more you, I mean, maybe exercise, but anything, like, you're going to be more familiar with your body. Yes. Your body's going to know the signals and how things happen. But for women, if we're just, we don't even know if we should be doing it, and then you feel like it's like taboo to be doing it, you're not doing it enough to know, like, to understand and to develop like that muscle.
Definitely, like the muscle memory. And it's the same, I think, to your point, is like when I masturbate, I can orgasm so much easier than with a partner. It's because you probably know your body a lot better. Like, you know what exactly feels good and what you want. And like, when you try to communicate that, it's not always super easy. Like, especially if it's like, say, a first time relation, like, you know, if it's a hookup, like whatever, like maybe it's like harder to be like, hey, you're not doing a good job. or whatever that communication is, and the constant, I don't know, like, I'm like a people pleaser in a lot of ways, and then I'm like, oh, am I hurting that person's feeling? Like, that's like a lot of things that you really have to work internally to like break that thing out of you, I think.
I can relate to that. And for women who also have difficulty just masturbating or just orgasming in general, like, how can Lioness help with that?
Yeah, so for us, I think, like, I will say for me especially, like, sometimes the hypersexual kind of things never perfectly resonated with me, because I still, like, when I was, like, starting, I was like, oh, like, it's kind of scary to be in this, like, super sexy world, because I don't really see myself as, like, super sexy, like, I'm a, you know, like, I don't really...
Lingerie.
Yeah.
And the music. Like,
so that, like, scares me a lot of times.
Or people think you're, like, a swinger or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, and, like, that's all, like, totally fine stuff, but for me, like, I was like, oh, the fact that, like, Lioness really takes away a lot of that, and just being like, oh, it's, like, data about yourself. Like, I'm learning about what's working for me, what's not. And then you get kind of, like, I started really having fun of showing people, like, the graphs and being like, hey, like, when I had 2 cups of coffee, my orgasms were so much better. Like, that's something I would have never known.
That's a tip right there. Drink some coffee before
you. Yeah, coffee. If you're in a state that's legal and you can purchase it, like, THC lubricants is really, really fascinating to me. I always am like, if you're into it, like, totally try it. But yeah, there's like different things, and you start becoming so curious about your own body. It just naturally, you start being like, hey, this is like what my orgasm looked like, or like, dude, my orgasm was like 1 minute long. Like, that's never happened before. So I think like there's a comfort level that happens with Lioness where you're kind of just learning about your body, and then you could tell it to your partners and like screenshot that data, like all these really cool things. But even aside that, like, even if you like penetrative toys are not, you know, like not everyone feels comfortable with it. So I always say, like, even if you're on a baseline of like, I don't feel comfortable with my own body, like, I think it's like turns into like just thinking about like what stuff makes you feel good, like what turns you on, like what makes you aroused, and then also like taking time to look at your whole vulva like structure in the mirror and just knowing about your body and like all of those experiences, like aside from the toys, like I think it is really just about like embracing your own body and like understanding how it works. And I think sexual pleasure is a huge part of it that we never really give the time and day. Because I'm always like, okay, like, so you masturbated. Like, when's the last time you thought about that masturbation process and, like, what was good about it? What did you, what didn't you like about it? Like, no one does that. Like, even I'm like, you masturbate, then you're like, I'm out of here kind of thing. So I'm going on with my day. So I'm definitely like, Linus helps you kind of take that pause to, like, really mindfully think about, like, what's working and what's not.
Yeah, no, that those are, that is a very, very good description of why someone should consider kind of looking into sex toys. Because I will have to say, I am someone who is like kind of like more efficiency based. I was like, yeah, and natural, minimal, I think I'll just use like my hands.
Yeah.
But, you know, committing to product and committing to like looking at the data really helps you deepen your relationship with understanding about that.
So, yeah, it's just another element. And then I think the sex toy world's like changed a lot. Like, because I used to be like, if you go into a sex toy shop and it's like pink and purple butterflies and glitter, and then there's like adult entertainers on the packaging, you're like, am I supposed to be in here? And there's like a lot of fear around that. But I think it's changed so much that I'm always like, dude, there's really cool things out there for everyone now. So I'm like really excited to like, yeah, like just push like the idea of like, yeah, you should just feel curious about what different things are out there.
Yeah.
But hands are cool. It's really manual. Yeah. Like it, you know, gets the job done. It's like always with you. It's kind of like a sure-proof way. So yeah, I don't knock that either.
Well, we've talked a lot about like orgasms now and kind of the biology of things. But what about sex drive? So I know you kind of talked about this before where your data shows it's kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. But I think for a lot of us who maybe didn't talk about it with our families or even with our friends, we see, I mean, the media and porn is kind of what is informing us, right? And it's always shown that women and men, that sex drives are like what is normal is like that you have a super high sex drive and that sex is always like super very sensual and that you're super, you know, it's like happening constantly, frequently, and super hot. What are maybe some examples if you found that there isn't necessarily an average, but like maybe a range of like what is a normal sex drive?
Man, so unfortunately my answer is really like there's really no normal of like what a normal sex drive is. And actually there's a book that I would highly suggest, like if, you know, like for listeners who are like, oh, like, you know, what that is, or like why is my like why am I not as like turned on, like all these different things, is Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. She does an amazing job of explaining like the concept of sex drive is actually just like doesn't even exist either. It's a really like made up thing of like, again, like the patriarchy of like, oh yeah, you're supposed to be like hypersexual all the time, like super turned on. Like it's all kind of like a gas pedal of like where you kind of are, like where you're kind of feeling. Sometimes you put brakes on things when things are like inhibiting like different feelings or like, you know, stress, like all these different things. So really it's kind of a wide range. I would say like it's really just about like where you are kind of in your like journey, like what might be kind of help, what might be putting like little bumps on the way to like not let you kind of get to that point or all these different things. But it's less of a like, oh, I have a super high sex drive or I have a really low sex drive. It's more just like a kind of a more flowing, moving thing of like different things might be adding to the factors that we don't really also talk about. Especially like antidepressants is like a really common one. And I think like it doesn't get talked about enough that it could inhibit a lot of like your desire or drive or whatever you want to call it, because they're like, you know, like it's helping you with other things, but like there's not a lot of research on it. And so it's like kind of like, but a lot of people will say like, damn, that's like something that I really go through when I'm on antidepressants. So I think that's like stuff that we don't really get to really talk about enough.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Well, speaking on like, you know, how there, well, there's no normal for a sex drive. And you also talked about antidepressants. And I feel like we've been in the pandemic now for about 2 years. And I think people have been, you know, dealing with their own mental health issues. Like, based on your research, how has the pandemic affected people's sexuality or sex drive?
Yes, I love this question because I, throughout my, like, couple of things I've done, like, I always talk about the media. I have a very love-hate relationship because I love that there's, like, a lot of good information, but there's also a lot of terrible information, and then I think it's made to feel alienating of a lot of, like, what we're experiencing. I would say like, especially when I was a teenager, when like the, you know, like the early 2000s, 90s of like the Cosmo magazine, 17 magazines, and they were like, how to please your man, or like, how do you keep hit your G-spot, or like just like all these things that just adds to all the stresses you have. So one of the things I think media really took wind of was when it first happened, it was this narrative of like, everybody's having sex. Everyone's having pandemic babies. Everyone's relationships are doing so well. Like, everyone's doing it. Everyone's buying sex toys, which is, I mean, for business, it's like good, like, of like, oh, like, everyone's buying sex toys is really cool. But I think the thing is, like, a lot of us were like, is that really true? What's the data around that? Like, are really people feeling like that? Because then now it's making people that aren't feeling like that, like, oh my God, like, maybe I'm in a terrible relationship. Yeah. What's wrong with me? Like, all of these things. So we actually collaborated with the Center for Genital Health and a couple of the researchers there. And then we created a research platform where our users could actually opt in. And that was the only, so we don't share data, like, any of that. We're not in the business of that. But we do give your users chances to be a part of studies, to like be like participating in like getting more information out there. So one of the big things we want to do is like, we want to see like what the usage looked like or masturbating frequency during the pandemic versus the year before. And so we had a bunch of like amazing users who opted into the research platform, and that's the only time we connect that data to the researchers. And so one of the biggest things we found in those results was that's really interesting is like in the year before the pandemic, usually during the holidays, people masturbate a lot more. Like, the holidays is kind of a peak season for a lot of people masturbating.
Interesting.
Like, yeah, I don't know if it's like the holidays or, you know, being in, I don't know, love.
Or maybe
there.
Like stress of being around family.
Stress, that could be too. Like, there's so many different factors. And so like, that's a really common one we've seen. But exactly the peak of the pandemic the following year was like during the holidays is actually we saw a statistically significant drop in, like, I think it was like one of the peak months where 37% is like drop in usage. And so we, from that, we were like, oh, you know, there's a lot of things going on. Like, there's a lot less people masturbating. Like, and so we actually sent out a post survey being like, hey, like, what are some things, like, how are you feeling? And one of the big things is like, I am so like, the pandemic is like an unexpected thing for everyone. Like, there's added stress. I'm stressed about being stuck with family. I'm stressed about not being able to see family. So there was just a lot of different narratives that came out, which is really cool for us to like have data proof, and then being able to send it out to media and being like, hey, like, cover this too, because like it actually helps normalize just everyone's experiences during these times. So the pandemic is really interesting. I think there's definitely been ups and downs of people being super sexually active and then not active, but I would say like peak pandemic was like definitely a rough time, at least from the data that we've seen, which is really cool for us to be able to even do.
Yeah. So I guess it's, if you're out there and you've been having less sex, don't feel like there's something wrong with
you.
It's normal under times of stress to kind of have that decrease.
Definitely. I should be probably like more in front of, like, because I think people are like, oh, so you're just like masturbating all the time. And I was like, dude, I go through like stress periods. Yeah. I'm not like, oh, I'm so in the mood. And sometimes it feels like work. Like, there's like all sorts of things that happen. So, yeah.
So you have collected all this information from women, we know within the U.S., but we're wondering, are you guys also selling internationally?
So we just expanded to Japan and Singapore, and then recently to India. So that's been really cool to kind of see the, like, we're slowly expanding. And I think for me, Asia is a very, like, special thing that I really want to see growth in. In weird ways, like, a lot of the Asian countries have been highly more receptive than the U.S. I always have to remind people, like, U.S. is a lot more conservative than I think what most people think. And, like, as a fun fact, like, Arkansas selling sex toys there is still illegal, and it's the only state that still has that law.
Wow.
And they've tried to actually repeal it multiple times, and it's never, like, it went to Supreme Court, and then they denied it at Supreme Court to even see the case. So, like, I think we just forget that, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, U.S., everyone's, like, so open about sex and stuff. And I'm always like, it's like a little bit of back and forth. Yeah.
So in Asia, have you collected any data? Do you see any trends with how, like, share with us kind of your knowledge of what sex culture for women particularly is like in Asia?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I would still say, like, that's something we're still studying too. And I think for us especially, like, I don't want to come into Asia being like, here's this American company, like, here's, like, what everybody needs. So I think that's been something that I wanted to be really careful of and, like, mindful. But, like, in Japan, there's been really, like, positive reception. This idea of, like, femtech has been, like, a really big thing, and, like, the wave of, like, the feminist movements and things like that. So I think that we're seeing that in Korea as well. There's still, of course, the taboo of, like, oh, like, you know, is it, if I have a partner, should I get it? Like, all these things. But so I think with that said, one of the biggest things that we wanted to do and what we just launched in Singapore is doing research studies that are just like the pulse of the nation, of like the mindset, the cultural, sexual behavior and mindset of, you know, for example, people in Singapore. And like, so we actually launched a study with a couple of other companies that are in femtech in Singapore, and then a researcher who's actually helping us do that study. So for us, it's more like, here's just kind of like the state of where everything is, and just helping gather that information, I think has been really cool for us to do, and like hoping to continue doing it to every country, also within the US, and just like all of this, to kind of just get a pulse of like how everyone feels lately about sex and how they sexual behaviors and comfort levels and all of that. But that's a study that's still going. But yeah, like overall, I think we're definitely seeing the shift of like people are feeling more comfortable with like maybe owning a sex toy and like maybe trying it out and stuff like that. But of course, like limitations of like we don't want to enter like go into like really religious countries who don't allow them, being like, no, like we need you. Like, I think we're all trying to figure out ways to really do it in a way that feels right.
Yeah. I love how intentional you are and being like considerate of the country's culture, because I think everyone navigates it very differently.
Yeah.
I think that's really considerate of your company. My question to wrap up this really fun segment, in my opinion, is like, what are some of your favorite current trends in female sexual health?
Ooh. Honestly, I think the biggest one I have to say is just that. So, for example, the term sex tech didn't actually exist when we first started our company. Like, it wasn't a category. I think a lot of people were like, oh, so you're in the porn industry, which is a really awesome industry. Like, some of the most amazing people I've ever met. But then we were like, but, you know, like, it's sex tech. Like, we're doing high tech stuff. Like, it was just, like, all over the place. So the fact that the term sex tech exists and femtech is a big, even the femtech industry as a whole is, like, a big thing that investors, like, everyone has their eyes on to see, like, how it moves. So I think the coolest thing we've seen so far is just the amount of cool companies coming out that just represent different bodies, different experiences, lives, like, different, just, like, yeah, like, that there's a product that really caters to any kind of thing. And it has to do a lot with, like, who the founders are, because they are like coming from either that space or see that gap. So I think it's really cool to see that, because I will say it's like historically sex toy industry has been like predominantly cis hetero white males, which is sometimes crazy for me to think of, like, why are these the people that are like designing our sex toys and sex products? Like, it's kind of a weird thing to me.
And using the nose test.
Yes, the stupid nose test that still I see it from time to time today, and I'm always like, oh my god. Like, So I think seeing that shift and seeing just so many like people wanting to come up in this space, and like for me, seeing like the young adults, like college students who will like message me being like, hey, I want to be in the sex tech space. I have this idea. Like, how do I get started? Like, that's amazing to me that a young adult even has that mindset of like wanting to enter the space. Cause like, I can't imagine when I was like 18 that I was like, I'm going to work in sex tech. Like, that's so awesome. Like, I would have been horrified of like, so scared of like what that would mean, for a reputation, resume, like all of these things. So I think it's really cool. I think I always like, I feel like we're in good hands, like as we move towards the future.
Thank you for sharing with us all of your knowledge of the female sexual health that you learned from Lioness. We want to ask you a bit more about kind of being an entrepreneur now. So you shared with us that, you know, you, because of your upbringing and the way that maybe our culture is, you were like working to get this engineering job, and then you landed at Amazon, and you were kind of like, this is what I should have achieved, right? And then you left that, and then you went and kind of, you know, started working with Lioness when you guys were just a startup. Can you share with us in more detail what that decision was like for you? And after the first year, did you ever have moments of like, you know, hesitation or regret?
I've had that for since like until up to last year, probably. Let's be honest. Like, like, I think the romanticization of startup culture and, like, entrepreneurship is really fascinating to me, because it's so funny. I think the true testament is that if I'm on a call with, like, just the, you know, my friends or something, and they're like, oh, how's everything, like, at Lioness? And you're like, oh, it's awesome. Like, it's great. Like, you know, like, you kind of go on through that. But I think if you ever talk to, like, I'm sure, like, any founders, and then you're like, how's everything? And then both of you are like, Like, it's good. Like, but you know, it's just like lots of things are happening. Like, you don't, and I think it's such an understandable feeling of like, like, I think for me, the biggest stress was constantly that, like, in my early 20s, you're always comparing yourself to, like, what you're supposed to be doing. Like, you know, like, people are getting married and having kids. Like, what am I doing? Like, you know, this constant thing. And so, like, I think up to even just, like, last year, I was like, okay, like, we've been in this business, like, 6-7 years. Like, is, you know, like, are we doing this right? Is this, like, you know, is this the right thing that we've built? Like, all of these things. And I say, I just mentioned this before the podcast, is, like, I just turned 30. And, like, people were like, things change when you're 30. And I truly felt like there's just this one day I was like, oh, my God, I'm really, like, proud of what I've done. Like, I was like, dang, like, I really, like, we've survived as first-time entrepreneurs. Like, you know, we didn't know what we were doing when we first started. And I think all of us took the jump of, like, okay, let's just not pay ourselves for, like, a year and a half and then just figure out, like, what we're doing. Like, we were so young. And so, like, I think there was a constant all of us kind of blindly just being like, dude, let's just try it. Like, I would say, like, there wasn't even as, like, hard of a thought beyond us just being like, let's just try it and see what happens. And then you go into this whole, like, yeah, the 6 years of, like, okay, like, is this how we're going to, like, is this where my life is going to go? Like, all of these things. And I just truly, like, had a moment where I was just, like, I mean, I still get imposter syndrome all the time, but, like, it's just, like, that feeling, like, completely melted away of just realizing, like, everyone's values are different in life. Mm-hmm. And I just realized, like, well, this is just a value that's really important to me. And so if I'm fulfilling that value, I'm actually doing life right. And then it's just not, it just might not be how my friend or my mom probably is, doesn't see it. Like, her value is, like, me getting married and, like, having all these things. And so I think I just had this moment of, like, man, like, I think I'm doing okay. And so, like, I feel pretty good. It's a constant battle. I would never say, like, I don't know if any entrepreneur I've ever met in my life is, like, everything is so perfect and, like, yeah. Like, it's a freaking hard process. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Like, I honestly, it's just, it was more of, like, let's just do it. Like, I really believe in it. And I think, like, the biggest thing for me is, like, just our mission and passions really carried. Like, our whole team, if you talk to any of them, like, we're so passionate about this space that I think that's, like, the continuing thing that has, like, consistently kept us alive.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. It's, I mean, I love that it's a honest answer. And I think as co-founders ourselves, we're like,
because you just passed your 4-year mark too.
Well, it's our 2-year full-time mark.
No, it's been not even two years. It's been about a year and a half. We did it part-time for about 2.5 years, I think, and then we went full-time for about a year and a half, so it's been about 4 years.
When you did that sigh, I could totally resonate. This is so random, but literally my brother called me yesterday. He's younger than me. He was like, oh, I wanted, he had an interview with the startup. He's like, I really want to work for a startup. I go, why? Why? Because my question is for these people who want to work for startups, like, what, like, really, like, why do you want to work for a startup? Because I think they're kind of idolizing or thinking about Google or Facebook or things like that. I'm just like, startups actually, like, encompass a large spectrum of businesses. Like, how many people are in them in a company? And, like, what is their mission? Like, it's just, like, why do you want to work for a startup, first of all? And two, like, I think as a co-founder, like, I feel like the culture gets really glamorized. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that you're always thinking there's something that can always be done. Things can be better. We can't predict the future in the sense, like, where our business is going to go. And for me, I like to hear, like, your story and where you're at with your company, because 6 years is a long time.
It is a long time. Right?
And even for us, like, I even though we've been doing this for 4 years, I feel like we've been doing this for almost, like, 2 years, in my opinion, because we haven't really gone full time yet. And, like, the one question I want to ask you as a co-founder is, I mean, how do you keep going after 6 years? Do you feel stagnant sometimes in, like, your current state of the company? Or, like, how do you keep, like, progressing forward?
I think for us, and I think for me, there's definitely points where you're, like, sitting at your office and you're like, is this, should I be doing more? Like, what am I doing? I think, honestly, like, and this is a really newfound, so I don't know if this is, like, jumbled thoughts in my head yet, but I realize, like, with this whole melting of, like, this, you know, how are other companies going to look at us? How are other founders going to look at us, what we're doing? I really, all of that really melted, and I think the biggest thing is, like, we were so scared and we were trying so hard to make it what a quote unquote proper company was, or, like, a proper Silicon Valley company, what that meant. Like, you know, all these strategies, like how we build. And I think like a lot of times we didn't do the fun projects because we were like, it doesn't really go with like, oh, should we be spending time on this? Like whatever. And so, but the fun thing, the sad thing is like, I think our team is incredibly funny and just really creative people. I really feel like my two co-founders, I love them to death. And I think it's so funny because they're just such creative brains. Liz is like such a creative brain of just wanting to do the silliest things in the most creative way possible. And I think we were so scared of like, oh, but you know, like because we're in sex tech, we have to be even extra more professional or like whatever, like all these things. And then I think one day we were just like, we were like, dude, we should just have fun, the fun that we've always wanted to. Like, what else could we possibly prove ourselves? Like, we built a hardware company, which is very not a sexy space to be in. We built it in sex tech, which is not sexy. It's, you know, two women founders also had a lot of problems back then of, like, being scared of women founders. Mm-hmm. We're first-time founders, like, all these crazy things. And then I was like, if this is not proof enough that we've done a good job, like, I cannot imagine what else we have to possibly do. So I think we started having more fun with just the things that we, like, the projects we've taken on, the collaborations. Like, we just started, like, let's have fun with what we build. And so that's really kept us like having a lot more fun of just like doing the stuff that makes us happy. Like Liz has like such a creative background. And so just being able to really lean into those things. Like we have some cool things we're launching for the holidays. Like, and it all just came out of us being like, dude, we should just have fun with this. Mm. So that, and I always have to like emphasize like your team super, super matters. Like I cannot even think of the number of companies I've seen implode, and it was just like, it's not even that they had a bad idea. It's like, it's hard being co-founders, right? Like, it's a lot of relationship building. You're almost, yeah, I see them probably more than like some of my friends a lot of times. Oh, yeah. And like, and then you're like at dinner together, and then you can't help but being like, okay, so that meeting tomorrow, right? Like, yeah. You'd be like, don't talk about yeah. that. Like, and so it's a lot of like relationships and boundaries and understanding, like just growing together. And so, I'm super grateful that like our team has been pretty much almost the same people like this entire time, and like just incredibly like passionate, mission-driven people. And so I think for us, like the fact that we've built such a strong, close team has like been a really like that's probably what's kept us like kept going. Is like, I think we all like as co-founders, we talk all the time is like, if one person's feeling really like, I'm so burnt right now, like it, the other two are no to carry. And yes, we've really built that like trust in each other. So I, you know, sometimes I'll be like, dude, my brain's about to explode. I'm like doing too many things right now. And then they immediately are like, okay, let's have a meeting. Like, okay, how can we offload things off you? Like, it's really cool to just have a good support system. And like, who's going to ever know your struggles more than the people building with you, right? Like,
yeah.
I can tell my brother or, like, you know, like, significant others, like, whatever. And then it's not the same because they don't really know. And so that's, I think, been, like, super, super important.
Oh, thank you for sure. I feel heard and seen. I know. Just from that conversation.
I know, right?
Mel and I keep looking at each other like, yeah. No, it truly is. It's such a sacred relationship that you have. And I didn't think about that with Linus. You have three co-founders and we have three that.
Yeah.
There is something about the synergy of three being a good number.
It is.
I think to your point, like when one is burnt out or the, you know, it's like a good balance.
Yeah. It's a nice balance of like, you're getting two sanity checks versus like, you know, you can go into an echo chamber between one-on-one. Just be like,
yeah.
You know, so it's been really cool. Yeah, three's nice.
It is.
Three's a good number.
Wow. I think I also realized for the first time, this is the first time on the podcast we had a co-founder that came from three. We only bring on usually like a solo co-founder.
Yeah.
I don't know how solo co-founders do it.
Or founder.
Co-founder. I also say co-founder.
I always say co-founder. Wow. No, I feel like I really resonate with what you just said. We know you came from Amazon. You came from a corporate background. During your time at Amazon, what do you think helped you in your work now as a Lioness co-founder?
Honestly, like because I talk about a lot that I was like at Amazon and I left, and I actually am so incredibly grateful for that experience. So I honestly, like, I think the question I get is like, should I go to corporate first, then startup, or start a startup, or, like, whatever? And I don't actually know what the answer is. All I know is like, for me, I was really grateful that I had that opportunity first. I had a really awesome team. And we worked on like concept. The idea was like our team worked like almost a small startup within Amazon because we were working on projects like 3 to 5 years out. We built prototypes because we had all disciplines of engineers in our team. And then we would build that product, take it to Seattle to the headquarters and show it to the exec team to try to get greenlit as a project. So one in itself, like that really taught me like working almost like a startup. A lot of the people on my team actually came from startup worlds, like, and they like, you know, like older now, and they're like, yeah, you should definitely do it. So they're super encouraging. So for me, like what I really learned is like working across disciplines a lot of like talking to a battery engineer and then talking to an antenna like person, like all of these things really helped understand how a company should run or like what a functioning company kind of builds on. So actually like a lot of things when I first started Linus, we actually brought on of like doing like kind of like principles, like what are principles that run our company. From my co-founder James, he brought this idea of like having everyone's like personality, like a we have like a little portfolio and everyone writes like if there's a conflict, this is how I like to be confronted. Like everyone kind of writes like things I like, things that bother me, like because it just helps kind of get an idea of when there is a conflict, like how what's the best way to resolve it with that person. And then I put fun things like Zodiac. I made them put like Zodiac and stuff in there because personally for me, I love it. I'm like, these are how these two Zodiac signs interact. Because all three of us, all the co-founders are Geminis, which...
Oh, interesting.
Some of our colleagues are always like, oh my God, that's so scary. And I'm like, what do you mean? Geminis are great. So a lot of that. And then, so overall, like doing kind of those like personality things, like I think we adopted a lot of stuff we learned from our old companies because it just helps like kind of put a baseline of like what we should do.
Yeah.
And I think like when I left, like everyone was so encouraging. Like a lot of the people that I met there actually like helped when I first started being like, hey, like I'm having this, like, I don't know how to like build this button because it's like not working sometimes. And then like one of the mechanical engineers was like helping me look at it and everything. So I think like I'm really grateful for that opportunity to have like just have an immediate network of people that were so willing to like help and support. And a lot of them purchased when we did our like crowdfunding Indiegogo campaign, which is also very nice. So
that's really nice. Mm-hmm. I can relate to that too, because I think it seems like moving from Amazon to Linus, it's kind of similar, I guess, lines of work. Even though it's different industries, like I can relate, because when I moved over to ABG, like all my friends, all my coworkers from like my studio job or my media job, like really were like supportive and like helped us with stuff. Like, hey, I need a photographer for this like merch shoot or whatever. I could call up someone I knew. So it's nice to have a supportive team. I feel like corporate experience is so like, I think just set our foundation for ABG too. Yeah. So I can see how incredible it is to have that type of background.
Yeah. Maybe Amazon will sponsor us now. Be like, oh yeah. They talk so much good about it.
Well, we're wondering, you know, you are a female engineer and you work in the sex tech space. That is like so many layers of uniqueness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What's the most rewarding part to you about being an Asian American female co-founder and entrepreneur in the tech spec? The sex tech space.
Yes.
It was a mouthful.
Honestly, for me, I think this is the advice I love to give like the younger like college students when they ask, is like, there's gonna be like, if you say like I'm gonna be a really good engineer, there's gonna be so many engineers that like cannot, like it's really hard to compete in that space of like just being a really good engineer. I mean, personally, I did terrible in college, so I'm not sure I even qualify. But I always say like what makes it really special is like your intersections of all the different life experiences, just things that you've done. And like for me, like being a woman founder, you know, that's Asian American, like I really felt like I brought all those things, like experiences and like me as a person into the company. And I think it helps resonate to a lot of people of like what we've built, because people are like, I understand this, like I feel seen or like heard in the way that you have built this or the way that you talk about it. So I think to me, it just makes me feel really grateful that I don't know, like, I guess I never meant to be, like, a Asian American, like, woman founder engineer in a sex tech space, but the fact that I get to do it and then just talk about my own experiences, and if that makes people feel more, like, either, like, super encouraged to enter the space, because please enter the space, we need more people in this, and, like, we need more representation, honestly, like, that, and then also just, like, yeah, just feeling seen. Because I remember, like, when I was a kid, like, I never, like, when do you ever see people that look like you? And especially in feeling sexual or, like, having sexual experiences. And so I think it's really fun to be, like, here to just do things that I feel like makes sense for my own experiences, and then hopefully resonates to other people, which has been really, really like awesome. And I think that's what I always tell people, like, I think that's what makes me a good engineer. It's really not my ability to do an integral at this point, because I don't know. But it's really just like understanding like what products I would want to see, and like how I want it to be represented, and the fact that I can build it. I think that's the superpower. So yeah, like I just feel really like grateful now. I think especially in the Asian American space, we're kind of opening up to talking about this stuff more and more, which is so cool to see. And just seeing that, like wave all come together, I think it's really like been a cool journey, I think, overall, because I would have never expected this. And I think, I'm sure my mom is like, because she's always told me, like, do not do a Korean interview ever. Because then it's like, you know, it's so interconnected to her friends and everyone. Yeah, yeah. But the fact that it's even a possibility now, I'm like, oh, like, it might happen. Like, sorry in advance. Yeah. But
dude, that'd be so cool.
Yeah. Well, I love that you highlighted, like, your perspective and just innately who you are as a person being a big rewarding aspect instead of the technical skills. Because I will also say, as someone who career transitioned and then ended up in tech, a lot of what for UX design, they say what pushes your skill set is, yes, there's like a baseline technical, but a lot of it is your perspective. When you're creating products for a consumer, being a woman, being Asian, means that you are going to see things that other people are not going to see.
Definitely.
You know, for serving the consumer and the user. So I like that you're emphasizing that for our listeners out there. Like, you know, we're always told to do well in school and the technical matters, but like, understand that your identity, as you know, is a huge role in the asset that you bring out into the world.
Yes, especially in tech, because there's also a glorification of engineering, which I'm like very like, dude, like that doesn't make you a good leader. Like you have to learn all the soft skills, all the writing skills, all the humanities, like, and we just don't we don't highlight it enough. And I'm like, that's gonna make you the best engineer. Like all technical skills could always be learned and like all of that. But I also say that because I was a terrible student.
I think you gave really good takeaway points for anyone who's young, who wants to enter the space, or also engineers who are about to enter the industry, you know. To wrap this episode up, you know, what's next for Lioness and how can our listeners support you?
Ooh, so we're constantly just working on one new features to constantly roll out within Lioness. And we're just trying to get just more information out there. We're doing a lot more research platform stuff where we're partnering with researchers to just get more studies out there, which is really, really fun. And we can always keep up with, and we're launching the really cool merch pretty soon, which I'm very excited about. It's so like just a fun thing for us, but I'm like super pumped about it. So if you follow us on all our social media, which is Lioness Health, our website is lioness.io. And then my personal Instagram is Anna is Average, and TikTok is Anna the Average. I will merge it at some point. I don't know why I decided to do two separate ones. It's horrible, but
Two separate handle names or two separate?
Yeah, because the Instagram is Anna is Average, and then the TikTok is Anna the Average, and it's a little bit of a mess. But now this is what I've said over and over, so I feel like now I can't change it. But I just try to post like things I've learned about sex, or just my own data, my own things that I've learned. If you ever just want to like learn random things, I try to keep it really entertaining and educational. So
are there accounts that you follow like that are like sex positive, or just in terms of more information?
Ooh, there's a lot. There's actually so many. I'm gonna forget all their handles at this very moment.
It's okay. If not off the top of your head, yeah, if you can send them to us, I think we'd love to share.
Yes, definitely will. Definitely will. There's a lot. There's a real lot of good ones.
Well, thank you so much, Anna, for being on our podcast, sharing with us your background, your story, the uniqueness of who you are, and the work that you're doing in the sex positive space, along with Lioness. To our listeners, please check them out. We definitely encourage more people to be more comfortable with their bodies, especially women, especially Asian women. Thanks again, Anna.
Thank you for having me.
If you don't already, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review, and share this episode with your friends. You can also support us through monthly donations at anchor.fm/AsianBossGirl/support or get some merch at AsianBossGirl.myshopify.com.
If you resonate with today's episode, let us know in the comments of our IG post. If you'd like to put faces to our names, you can find us on YouTube where we share vlogs, an audience Q&A segment called GRBG, and much more. Our handle on both platforms is AsianBossGirl.
And we have a couple of shout-outs from our listeners today. From Erica to Corinna in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, I am so proud of you for everything you've achieved this past year, and in particular, running your first half marathon. I will always be cheering you on. From Jeffrey to Tram in Philadelphia, thank you for making me the happiest I've ever been. I love you, boo-boo head. Aw, that's cute. From Josh to Annie in Austin, Texas, she just makes me laugh and the world deserves to know. Guess the world does deserve to know. From Valentina to Kathy and Rosemead, super strong and also always reminding me to take time for myself, she helps me reflect and has purposeful intentions. From Val to Christine and Rosemead, my sister is an amazing hardworking role model that never stops. She's constantly moving and motivates me to be independent and not scared of going to the gym in the dark and night. Val also has a couple of other sisters. She says, I have four sisters, so I have a lot to say. To Anne, Anne is so creative and comfortable in her stances. I hope to be the same. And her other sister, Michelle, is always up for anything, and she appreciates your inclusivity. From Jin Lin to Eileen in Taiwan, I am so proud of everything you have accomplished in Paris. I cannot wait to be reunited with you and the family soon. From Leo to Danny in Seattle, everyone close to her, including myself, is lucky to have her warmth and kindness. She deserves the biggest shout-out during this cuffing season for all the people that she has brought together as a matchmaker. Ooh. From Brian to Jasmine in Mobile, Alabama, happy birthday, Jasmine. I love you very much, and you are very much my Asian boss girl. I'm so glad to be a part of your life, and I look forward to our continued adventures heading into the future. And last but definitely not least, from Esther to Jane in Baltimore, happy birthday, Jane. You have the most special heart, and I'm so happy that we are soul sisters. Can't wait for our next travel adventure. If you'd like to send a few words of encouragement or a shout-out to a friend, check out the link in the show description or our link tree and our link in bio on Instagram and click on shout-outs.
And last but not least, thank you to our super talented editor, Michelle, for working all her magic on our episodes, including this one.
And we'll catch you all on the next episode.
Bye! Bye.